Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday. I hope everybody had a great, great weekend. Well, as you know, Friday we closed off a little bit early so that Shelley and I could go to the quite large Palm Beach County mental health meeting. And it was made up of a lot of community leaders, a lot of the community itself, some of us who have a invested interest in what's going on in that realm, some of us who would just like to help, some of us who realize that mental illness in a lot of cases has a lot to do with some of the things that we've seen occur, some of the tragedy, some of the actions that have taken place where we've lost children, we've lost people. We've learned a lot about juvenile suicide. We've learned a lot about the fact that sometimes we need help. Sometimes we need to be able to talk to somebody. Sometimes it doesn't go away if you sleep on it. And these issues have become more and more apparent every day. And one of the biggest reasons is because there's not enough people trained, first of all, to recognize the issues. And I don't think even training is always the answer, by the way, because I think you can learn the facts and still not have the instinctual ability to realize when somebody is crying out for help. So we learned a lot, Shelley and I, and this morning I'm going to go over, they gave us a wonderful kind of booklet that is all stuff that they organized over the last 3 months, probably a lot longer than that, but 3 months they have been working on these open forums in different communities. They started in Palm Beach. I went to that one. That was in January. Then they went to Belglade. Then they went to Jupiter. Then they went to Delray Beach. In all these places, they came up with more and more information. At the gathering on Friday, Paolo DeVecchio, the director of the Center for Mental Health Services at SAMHSA, he was the keynote speaker. And he tells a story of abuse and mental illness in his own life, and how he got where he is because he was immersed in that arena on the other end and grew up and learned things and pulled himself out of a very, very dark place. And now he sits at the helm of an organization that's really trying to make a difference. So, as always, when you meet somebody like that who really, really knows what they're talking about because been there, done that, you have to pay attention. So it was interesting, to say the least. I still see, and I'm sure other people still saw, issues that, bothered them a little bit and made them think, I don't think that's the answer, or I do think that's the answer, but I think it needs tweaking. So, as I said, we're going to talk about that this morning. I'm going to bring Shell in, and we're going to go over this paperwork so I stay focused because I can get on quite a tirade about this. So, good morning, Shell. How are you?
Good morning, Rainey. How are you?
I'm good. I read through all this information again last night, and then I was interested. Do you remember when we got in the car, there was a yellow sheet of paper folded up and in my door handle? And I wondered what it was, and I didn't read it until today. Or I didn't open it. And then I realized that it's in our packet. And it's a message from an individual who talks very, I would say, wisely about some of the things that are going on in the world. And I think that his issues are mostly toxic issues, which I didn't hear addressed in the meeting, really. But it's an interesting sheet of paper, so we're going to go over that, too. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you felt about everything that you learned at the meeting?
Well, I mean, just from an overview without getting into any of the specifics, my overview reaction was that they were too, they were still cubbyholing. They were still, I thought the fact that this forum took place was remarkable. I think we have the appropriate players in place. I mean, the different organizations and governmental organizations that were being represented, I thought was great. But I still saw singular actions being done where they're talking about bringing in the actions of everybody so that there's no gaps anymore, because they talked about the frustration of somebody going to one organization, and it seems like the right hand rarely knows what the left hand is doing, that type of thing. But I still saw some of that separatism going on, even as they're trying to move forward and kind of pull their activities together. I still saw that there were some obvious gaps there, and I guess there will be until this moves forward. These are just the first steps, but from my standpoint, I still saw things that were not being addressed, being overlooked, or where there was still too much emphasis being placed in certain types of help, where other people were obviously still being left without answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I haven't said this today on the show yet, but of course my platform is about the big picture. And I cannot understand how anybody thinks that they can solve any problems ever if all they think about is what affects them personally, because the world is much bigger than that. I think you need to address what affects you personally, of course. I mean, you know, of course you do. But should your decisions be based on just your little cubbyhole? No, not ever. So one of the things that poor Shelley had to hear my tirade all the way home, that had me very incited, was when you talk about an issue that exists in a place as big as our world, as big as our community, in some cases as big as our own families, and only think about how things, you know, what you're seeing, how it affects you, and what you feel would make you more comfortable, for what it's worth, will never work. Because you have to be able to see how I need to see how it's going to affect Shelley and Shelley's family and my brother and his family and the man that lives next door and his family and the man that lives in Belglade and his family. If you really want to make a difference, that's the way you have to look at things. So what I saw, even though I saw great minds, people a lot smarter than I'll ever be, a lot more experience in this realm, for sure, but still, it was like they had on blinders when they spoke. I think people feel more self-assured when they talk about how things affect them. I get that. But the remedies can't be based on how they affect an individual. The input can come from that, but the answers or the way to fix everything has to include all, the whole picture. So when we talk about addressing people that we get trained to recognize have got issues going on, either outside things that are affecting their mental health, or things that they were born with, or whatever the case might be, I think it's important to have those people who can recognize it. But I think that unless somebody is, you know, if you have measles and you're not broke out yet, nobody knows you got measles. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So if you're struggling with your own mental health, but you've not drawn any attention to it with your behavior or anything else, you're just holding everything inside, then nobody helps you. So it seems to me to really make sure that we're taking care of everybody, even the ones that don't have the measles broke out all over them, they all have to be treated for measles. So I think that some of the things that they come up with and some of the things that I read about in the paperwork that was collectively put together from the input of local residents in all these places that I named off today, Del Rey and Belgrade, Jupiter, West Palm Beach, all these places. So they all mean something, for sure, and these are the people that have to be addressed. But the truth of the matter is, to make a difference, you got to address everybody. So when we talk about going into a grade school...
Let me interrupt you. I like the analogy you just told about the measles and all that. Mm-hmm. And obviously people that have measles or things like that do have them before there's any outward appearance. Mm-hmm. But how would you treat somebody for the measles before it manifests, before you even know they have it?
Well, it's by enlightening everybody as a whole, not just picking
people. Because you feel something
people.
Going wrong with your body before the measles manifests. Is that what you're saying? So this way
we'll
try to teach people how to recognize that they need help before it's so obvious that it's like they have marks all over their face, so to speak.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, until somebody who is struggling with mental illness has an outbreak, you don't know that they're struggling.
Right.
What if they are really, really, even at five, really, really good at maintaining? You see, then they get counted out because everybody thinks they're, and I get every day, the more I learn, I hate to use this word because I don't think there's any such thing as normal.
Yeah.
You know, normal is like, exactly what is that? Please tell me, because I'm pretty sure I'm not normal. Compared to somebody else who is more normal or
Probably should use something like okay, because okay is individual. If you feel okay, if you feel good about yourself and about your life and you're okay, that's your normalcy. But your normalcy might not be normal for somebody else. But an individual okay and like they feel like their life is moving forward in a way that's manageable and happy and content and things like that, that would be their normal. But it's individual. You can't set a society norm because we're all too different.
Well, that's my whole point. That's what I'm saying. It's not there. You can't say the word normal and have it addressed the population, because there is no set normalcy. It's normal for a baby to cry when they want something. Not normal for you to cry when you want something.
Right.
It's normal for a 5-year-old to stomp their feet and scream when they are upset about something, or somebody's being mean to them, or something's happening that they don't understand. That's not normal for you to do.
So everybody has to be addressed in a different light, and it goes much deeper than ages and issues. It goes, you know, it goes so much deeper than all of those things that it makes it impossible to put a label like normal on somebody. Okay, to say the temperature is normal for this time of year, I can go along with that. It's okay to say the that's the normal rate of speed that people go almost all over the world, 55 to 65 miles an hour. All those kind of things that we've set in writing and in stone. But when you're talking about people, please, the variables are uncountable. So
right.
In order to make a difference, is everybody has to be treated like this may happen to them. Everybody has to be enlightened like this might happen to them before you see the measles, before you see the marks that prove or the outbursts that prove that something is going on. Then they have to be enlightened as to how to deal with this when it happens to them in the very, very beginning, which means addressing all of us as a whole, which means going into kindergarten and doing what Izzy has in so many different ways and in so many different words showed us, that we have to, again, go back to social behavior. And we have to address the kids so that they get that if they have a feeling that they don't understand, then they have to be talked to about it like you know that they have that feeling. You can't assume that they don't just because they haven't told you or they haven't done anything that alerts you to the fact that there's a problem. So if you go into, remember I said, and I've said this many, many times, and you always agree with me about this, about really watching toddlers and watching the aggressive ones, the shy ones, the bullies, the babies. They're already a parent at a very, very, very young age. And just because they're shy or they're gregarious in their behavior doesn't mean there's mental illness. That's ridiculous. But they're already forming their personality, their mold that's going to stay with them most of their lives unless something else happens, unless there's an intervention to teach them how to, for the sake of not knowing a different word, behave properly in a world where there's all kinds of different things going on. So it's about teaching all of them, not just saying, okay, you're the teacher in this first grade class. I want you to recognize. And they even said during the forum that wasn't the right idea, that they couldn't train a teacher, nor did they have expectations of training a teacher that has a classroom of 20 to 30 kids to recognize mental illness. I mean, they said that's ridiculous. Or to go to the police force in your town and train one of the policemen or two of the policemen to be observant and recognize when somebody has mental issues. Now, sometimes they're blatant. We all know that. Shelley and I are avid watchers of Law and Order and shows like that because it teaches us, believe it or not, it's drama. But many, many of the shows that we watch on there are things that we see happening in real life all the time. So you...
And the problem is that there's the symptoms of mental illness. You know, every one of us have felt it one time or another. That doesn't mean you're mentally ill. So that's the other part of it, too. If you get somebody who's just having a really bad day, and by the end of the day they're so frustrated, they're acting out of character, we've all had moments in our life that we acted out of character for our personality. That doesn't mean we're mentally ill. That means we had a day in our life, or sometimes a week or a month, where life just seemed to pile on top of you and you became overwhelmed and acted out of character. But as soon as you're through that period, as soon as you start seeing light at the end of the tunnel, you level off, or you talk to people and you get it off your chest and you start feeling more like yourself. That's not mental illness. That doesn't require drugs. That doesn't require institutionalizing anybody. But unfortunately, sometimes what happens is that you have authorities get involved in it and label the person mentally ill because they were having a really bad day and maybe were very volatile. Maybe they screamed back at the officers, things like that, because they hit their emotional threshold. So it's almost like there's a duality in the problems here, is that sometimes the people that really do, because there are mental illnesses, sometimes the people that have mental illnesses are not being recognized and given the help they need, and people that are just having a rough spot are being diagnosed as having mental illness and either medicated or institutionalized when it was a temporary problem. It wasn't mental illness is something that would need to be treated. But just having a bad day and acting out of character just requires time.
So my mother-in-law, who passed on several years ago, used to have a phrase that she used all the time, and until I met her, I had never heard it, and I use it a lot today because it just resonated with me. She would say that people were feeling mean today. She would say that about her. She would say, I feel mean today. Don't know really why, but I just feel mean. And I'd think to myself, how do you feel mean? I mean, the only time I could remember, and this is when I was in my 20s, that I would feel mean is if somebody did something to make me mad. Then I might feel mean. But she talked about feeling mean as though it was a mood or frame of mind that she was in on a particular day. Or she would assess that somebody else felt mean. And I would, you know, I started listening to that and watching that. And, of course, the first time she ever said it to me, I only had Spikey. And I realized even as a baby, it was a happy baby. I had a terrible birth with Spikey. He was born a month early, and it was a horrible birth. I didn't know it at the time. I thought that's what everybody went through because it was my first child. But after having three, I realized it was a toughie. And but he was a very content, happy baby. But every now and then, it didn't matter what I did. He wasn't hungry. He wasn't sick. He wasn't anything. He just would feel mean. And, of course, with meanness comes, when you're a baby, comes crying and inability to fall asleep, restlessness, all those kind of things. So I learned that she was right, and I see it now in people every day. I definitely learned a lot about that phrase working at the Institute, because when you're dealing with somebody who's incredibly ill, they have lots of days when they're maudlin. You know, by that I mean very subdued. Reflection is a big part of their day, thinking about, you know, what they've done, what they haven't done. And then other days, they feel mean. And they feel like it's unjust what has happened to them. So I learned a lot about those kind of emotions with people when they're struggling with an issue. So again, would you deem somebody like that mentally ill? Of course you wouldn't. They're right. Going through a time in their life. But if you want to compare somebody who is suffering from a mental illness and this person, they're very alike. They're very similar. The mood swings are there. The ability to go from crying to laughing in a split second, that's there. You know, so it's a much, much, much bigger picture than everybody's giving it credit for being. And it is not, and it is about mental balance, mental health, period. Not just mental illness, but mental health. And, of course, all these organizations, when I think about those, I look through here and I see almost all of them use Mental Health Association, where's all my things about that. All the different companies and organizations that helped with this whole program, most of them have health in their title. You know, they talk about Palm Healthcare, the Mental Health Association, Palm Beach Health, NAMI, Boys Town. They all talk about the health end of it. Mental health matters. It's all about the health part. So
right.
if you're going to support mental health, you're not supporting mental illness. You're supporting mental health, which includes all of us, right? Includes each and every one of them that we met the other day, each and every one of us that we know, everybody in every corner of the world. If you're going to support something, it should be mental health. And it's the same as physical health. Sometimes you're sick and sometimes you're not. So my big thing, and Shelley already knows this, of course, because I ranted all the way home, is that I want people to understand that this picture is much bigger than just seeing somebody who is in trauma. So when we talk about mental health, everybody has to be addressed. Everybody. And I think that's the only way that this will ever get under control. I also was very impressed by our assistant mayor who spoke, who was on the panel. She was actually, even though everybody was articulate and well-spoken, and you can see that everything that they said came from their heart, she was the only one, and probably because of the seat she sits in, recognized that it's a big picture. It's not narrowed down to just the people that you can see their measles. It's about everybody. And she seemed to get that more than anyone else, so I applaud that. I do want to... Yeah, you liked her too, right, Shel?
Yep.
She was... She was definitely addressing us as a whole. But I want to go, I don't want to read this whole thing because there's lots of stuff, but they have highlights on each page, which I found to be important to look at. By the time our children are 18 years old, 46% will have a mental health disorder. That's half of them.
Say that again?
46% by the time they are 18 years old will have a mental health disorder. And 21% of youth ages 13 to 18 has a severe disorder. Severe. So that's almost a quarter of our youth. Half of our youth will have issues. A quarter of our youth between the ages of 13 and 18 will be severely compromised by their mental health. Among adults aged 18 or older, the rate of serious mental illness during the past year is 4.1%. Palm Beach County has an estimated 45,000 adults with serious mental illness. Only about half of American children and teenagers who have certain mental disorders receive professional services, according to a nationally represented survey funded in part by the National Institute of Mental Health. So, again, it's only the ones that get into the system. You hear that in everything that we read, right?
Right.
It ranks 49th in the nation, ahead of Texas and Idaho, in the per capita, that means per head, spending for mental health services. However, Texas just added millions to its mental health budget. So all of those things are not good. You know, I mean, that's scary to think of those facts and know how far away we are to getting in. bona fide.
I have to be honest before you continue. I have a hard time accepting those statistics because you're telling me that if 50% of youth have mental illnesses right now, that is very bleak for our future. I believe that there is mental illness. I believe there's a lot of mental illness that goes untreated, but I don't believe that it's 50%. I think that those statistics are horrible, and I think that the reason why the statistic is so high is because the DMSO, which is like the handbook for psychiatrists where they code mental illness, they've actually have things like shyness or being overly flamboyant as mental illnesses. So when you're talking about bipolar and schizophrenia and things like that, that's a mental illness. But when you look at the DMSO, I've seen copies of it, they have things in there that are listed as mental illnesses that are personality traits. So this is one of the problems I have with this whole conversation because there's two extremes. There's people that are being underdiagnosed and there are people that are being overdiagnosed. And there are personality traits that are being listed as mental illnesses that aren't. They're just personality traits. You know, not everybody's going to be the same. You are going to have a shy person and a flamboyant person and somebody who's very self-confident. It doesn't mean because they have different personality traits that they all have a different mental illness, and that's basically where psychiatry has gone. So I don't accept those statistics, but what I do accept is that there is a lot of mental illness that's going untreated today because we don't have appropriate standards.
Well, but again, the whole point is that I just said in the whole beginning of the show is that unless, I mean, giving something putting a tag on somebody or putting, what is it everybody uses? What's the terminology everybody says for that?
A label.
Everybody with the various things that, you know, that just says, you know, this person is, immature. This person is erratic behavior. This labels on people are impossible because you can catch me on any given hour and you might have to have 15 or 20 labels in your hands during the course of a day to label me correctly. And
yeah, I know. I'm the same way.
So if we want to address everybody, there will be numbers like this. And it doesn't mean that somebody is this way permanently.
Right, but that's what mental illness means. You could have 50% of the population at any given moment in time struggling emotionally. That doesn't mean they have mental illness. That statistic said 50% of youth have mental illness. I don't buy that. I think that is grossly unrealistic.
Frightening.
Because if people believe that they are mentally ill or that their child is mentally ill, then they get the pharmaceutical industry involved and they start
medicating. Yes, but they don't say that. Now stop. They don't say that. They say a mental health disorder. They don't say mental illness. Those are two different things. Yes. 46% will have a mental health disorder. 21% of youth aged 13 to 18 will have a severe disorder. They don't say, they don't put the label mentally ill on, that huge amount of people.
But that's what a mental health disorder is. Having a bad day is
not. No. They can put a disorder on anorexia. And we know people get better from anorexia. Bulimia, we know people get better. We've seen it. There's a lot of things that can be.
Yeah, but anorexia is a mental illness. That's
yes,
it's not a disorder.
I know. Well, no.
You and I could show on this. I don't want to interrupt you anymore.
A disorder means something has, for me, means, it's got a title. We understand the effects of anorexia. We know what happens to somebody who has anorexia, so then it becomes a disorder. Mental illness for me means a whole much bigger plate of food.
Right, but just so you understand, Rainey, when the medical in the medical environment, because not everything that I had was considered an illness. Some of the things that I had were considered diseases. Some of the things I had were considered disorders. It has to do with the chemistry of the body, or whether it's a disease or a disorder. But the things that I had that were considered disorders under the medical heading still required either surgery or medication. So it's still something that in the medical arena, a disorder is just a different level of how it chemically affects the body, or the biochemistry of the body is affected. But it's still in the if you diagnose somebody with a disorder, they still require treatment. It doesn't take it out of the treatment realm of medical intervention. So you may not think of a disorder that way, but the medical industry does. They still look at it as something requiring their intervention.
Well, no, of course. Otherwise, there wouldn't be these statistics. Of course, I understand that. But what I'm saying to you is, it's all different. It's all different levels. All different levels of issues and problems. It says in this, only about half of American children and teenagers who have certain mental disorders receive professional services, according to a nationally representative survey funded by the National Institute of Mental Health. So the point, they say in all these little excerpts, everything that I ranted about yesterday. So it appears as though, after I read all this, it appears as though, even though I felt that they were trying to put mentally ill people, all ages, all sizes, all shapes, all nationalities, all, into a lump by themselves and try to treat them. The point I was trying to make is that our mental health is on a tight wire most of the time. And we can have days when we're sliding off and days when we're right on cue. So for me, mental health is something that needs to be addressed just like physical health. I'm not sick today. I could be sick tomorrow. I'm mentally sound today. I'm on top of my game. But that doesn't mean I'm going to be tomorrow. That's the only point I'm trying to make. I don't care about words like disorder or ill or issues. I don't care what they are. If you spend the day in bed crying all day, there's something wrong with you.
Right.
I don't care whether it's a disorder or whether you're actually sick. Something's wrong.
Well, there's only something wrong with you if nothing precipitated it. If your best friend died, and then you can't get out of bed for a couple of days, that's not mental illness. That's not reacting to life. But if you just all of a sudden get up one day and you just feel like you can't cope with life, yeah, then you have an issue. So you can't take it out of context, and that's what a lot of doctors do. They don't even find out that the person just went through this trauma in their life and tell them, okay, look, you know, you went through a tough thing. This is going to take some time. You have to allow yourself to go through the emotions. What's happening to you is normal. Just go home and let the work through the grief, you know. But what they do is they medicate the people, or they say that they're suffering from depression. No, you're not suffering from depression if your best friend died and you can't get out of bed. That's not depression.
If it's a month later, it is. If it's a month later and you can't pull yourself out of it, something else is wrong.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure there are some out there that are that blind to reality that would say, you know, I mean, because in the past 3 years, I've taken Spike to every initial doctor visit, and I do all of the paperwork. I fill out everything. And they ask all these questions now. I mean, it's not just, you know, is there cancer in your family? Is there mental illness in your family? Is there depression in your family? They ask these questions now on these forums. So it is what it is. I mean, I see people trying to address us as a whole, but again, that only helps if somebody's aware, first of all, and secondly, being really honest. A lot of people aren't going to tell you if
I'm not even sure why they ask those questions. I mean, yeah, the last time I went to a doctor was before 1998, and during that 20 years as an adult that I had been seeing doctors, I always had to answer questions like that. But, and you've commented on this before, I had to answer all these things, whether or not this was in my past or if this was in, you know, somebody in my family had depression or cancer or heart disease or blah, blah, blah. But half the time, I don't even know if the doctors ever read it because they would say things to me that showed me that they didn't even look at my answers to half the questions. So I'm not sure why those questionnaires are filled out, because I've seen more than once where the doctors don't even review the answers, you know, just based on questions they asked me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think, to be honest with you, when you're talking about it in that realm, I don't think the doctors care about anything but what pertains to them. I think those records are to protect the licenses and things like that of a doctor that's taking care of you. So I agree with the fact that they don't read it. And I will tell you, now in a doctor's office, he most of the time is looking at a computer, not even at you. Although...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The doctors... Yeah. That since the heart failure and the carotid surgery and all that stuff, we've gone to a different group of doctors, and I see a little bit more. Actually, when Spike finishes radiation, everybody is involved in his treatment, and I'm very, very impressed. He walks in the door. Oh, there's trouble. Hey, Mr. Brewer, what's up today? He called the other day and said, I wanted to make what time I was supposed to be here. And the little girl who works at the front desk was just absolutely adorable. She says, Mr. Brewer, you're supposed to be here today at 1. He said, okay. But he says to her, you better wear some sunglasses because I'm wearing Bermuda shorts and my legs are so white they look like two neon lights. We walk in and there she is with her sunglasses on.
Aw, so, I love it.
Yeah, then we walk down the hallway, and here comes the technician. There he is. There's trouble, and this one comes around the corner. Hey, Mr. Brewer, Mrs. Brewer, how are you today? And it's lovely, and it's a horrible part of life that you have to go through something like that. But they all were very impressed by this particular office and the behavior of everybody involved. Now, it hasn't been so through this whole journey by a long shot. So
right.
Nice to meet. And even in, I'm not real impressed with the hematologist's office because the people who are out front, who are the first ones that greet you, have personalities of, you know, various mops. So
have you noticed that, like, when you go to certain doctor's offices, or technical offices like a hematology place or a lab, that you seem to see a common thread throughout the staff, that they're either most of them are warm and inviting and seem very caring, or most of them seem to be very aloof and almost lacking compassion, and they're just kind of like mechanically going through the routine of their day. That's been what I've seen, that it seems to be a tone. So I don't know who's setting that tone, but it seems to be that I've seen either one or other energy, and it seems to permeate throughout the staff. So you're either having a warm and inviting staff or a very cold clinical staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. Listen, Elise has joined us. I want to let her in. Good morning, honey. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning to you guys.
Morning, Elisa.
We are, I don't know when you got on because I was on another page. Have you been on long enough to hear what we're talking about, Elise?
I just caught on at 7:35, so I'm listening about, you know, the congeniality versus the not-so-courteous offices, and I agree.
Yeah, well,
but
it does make
I hope your husband's doing all right, having, you know,
this is week 6 that we're going into right now, and there's 7 weeks of this. So this is week 6, and he had a rough The end of last week was very rough. The weekend was pretty rough, but he's a bull moose, so he's holding his own. But it hasn't been fun. But I think, like I just told Shelley, the people that he's with every day have been amazing. They don't just walk past him; they stop, they talk to him. I took pictures of him getting on the radiation machine last Friday, and brought him home and showed him to the kids and everything. My daughter, of course, was reduced to tears because it's not, it's kind of almost medieval looking what they do, although it's, cutting edge, but it seems medieval because they put him in restraints and all that kind of stuff. So it's a road, but I want to get back to this because I want to share some of the other things that's in this folder. And some of it is amazing because they get it now, I think, and I think there's hope for us. The criminalization of mental illness is the biggest thing that they're trying to address. There's quotations all over this paperwork. I told the cops I was suicidal and they laughed at me. Is it common to ask if a person would rather be in jail or in a mental hospital? It should be. I would much rather be in a hospital than in a jail. These are quotes from some of the young people that part of the Palm Beach Mental Health Association. My son is now in jail for drugs. The public defenders are so overwhelmed with their caseloads. I have spent tens of thousands of dollars on my son for treatment and everything. Now that he has a record, he can't rent an apartment because he can't pass a background check. His criminal record is linked to mental illness. That was from a Del Rey meeting. This is from Del Rey as well. I am a consumer. I had a 7-month episode of mania. A friend didn't know what to do and called the police, and they took me to jail. The police are rough. They handcuff you and throw you down. The judge lost my case. I had no attention for my mental illness. I got no attention for my mental illness, sorry. It was 3 weeks before I was finally transferred to a mental health facility. I still have a record. They can't take that blot off my record. With a record, you can't get a job. The system works against you. We need to change the law. Mental illness is not a crime. My daughter is afraid to call the police. They call her crazy, nuts. They make fun of her. We are missing a most vital piece, multi-team level case consultations. We had this before and it disappeared in the 80s. Now that's from somebody who is immersed in the program and understands the importance of being able to have more than one person assess you, and I would agree with this. I see this from more of a political viewpoint. My son in the Veterans Administration system committed a felony and got 15 days in jail. He is still under our fiduciary care, but they gave him his money, a huge amount with no input from his mental health providers, social workers, or his mother about whether it is appropriate to give him that much money. They would not accept the letter from the psychiatrist. They didn't communicate with other systems. So that's somebody who's obviously, the son was involved in a lawsuit, and she knows that the son has mental health issues, and they just handed him all that money. So we all know that will lead to his demise, very sadly. I have kids in school where the families are affluent, and the kids have parents that are uninvolved, but no one is talking out loud about kids who are taking drugs in the parking lot. We need to talk to our kids. Now I think that is another big part of our social acceptance today. If you talk to a 20-year-old who is involved with, I'm only going to say marijuana because most people do not discuss the fact that they do other drugs, but it's very common for a young person to have no qualms about sharing with you that they do smoke weed, because it keeps them mellow. They don't get in trouble. They'd rather smoke weed than drink. I mean, I've heard all the arguments about it. I've been arguing about weed since I was 30. So, but it is an issue. And again, anything that alters who you are can be dangerous to you. I don't care who you are, what you think, or anything else. Anything mm-hmm. that alters your personality can be a danger to you, because it takes you to a different place. For some of us, one glass of Mogan David grape wine makes us another person. So
right.
Anything that you do that alters who you are inside needs to be addressed, needs to be looked at. And, of course, this brings us to the worst thing that's happening to the kids, the young people who are suffering from disorders, as they call them in this, is they're addressed with medication. And I spoke out at the first meeting, and I actually utilized my information that I've gotten from Elise. And I said, you know, you decide a child is unruly, you can't keep control of him, he's got too much energy, he's got this, he's got that, so he's diagnosed as ADHD, and you can't keep his attention. Oh, there's a shocker. I never could keep the attention of any of my kids for longer than they were interested. So they give him something to take that's going to relax him. So you're going to alter who he is. And then all of a sudden you're shocked because that altering isn't working anymore. So now he's chewing what you gave him. And then from chewing what you gave him, he's looking for something else. It's a major, major cycle, and it's the road to, you know, nowhere. So they do address that a little bit. In this, they do address the fact that medications and things like that are often the downfall. But we didn't hear a lot about that, did we, Shelley?
No, they didn't really talk. They talked, most of the forum was about identifying and having resources, but they never said one of the resources was medication. They just said identifying that someone was in trouble and needed help, and then making sure that they had a clear-cut avenue to get that help. To get the resources and not have to bounce around the system for months, like some of the nightmare stories they told us is people that were in immediate crisis and sometimes took them months. Like the one woman who was suicidal, took her 3 months to finally get help from somebody, and they kept bouncing around from one agency to another. So that was a lot of their talk, is to make the access to treatment more streamlined, to make the identification more, you know, quicker to get to. But no, they really didn't talk about the medical aspect as to what that treatment was. Are they talking drugs? Are they just talking counseling? They didn't go into the specific of what the treatment would be.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a phrase that comes to my mind, and I think it should be a part of this program. And I worked on my email to Pam, who's the CEO over there, and she's a lovely lady.
And Gianfrido, I think her name is. Yeah.
Yeah, Gianfrido. And,
right.
Yeah, she's very nice. But I think we need to hone in on the first person can help. The first person you see can help. Not the first person you see can pass you on to somebody else, and they can pass you on to somebody else, and they can pass you on to somebody else until somebody is capable of making a decision. The first person can help. They should
like that.
Wrap arms around that phrase and make it happen. The first person can help, not the 15th person, the first person. 2 to 3-year-olds are out of control in preschool. The other day we talked about Baker acting a 3-year-old. We are kicking kids out of nursery school. What is the future of this child?
Wow.
This is from a school psychologist who gave this information at one of the forums. I cover 3 schools and I'm the only one trained. There should be a school psychologist in every school. Some guidance counselors can do it, but some are not comfortable. Nationally, only a small portion of children with emotional problems are getting special education accommodations. Issues don't just pop up overnight. The warning signs can be seen in kids in school. We need to identify emerging problems in school. And we did hear a lot of powers that be talk about the fact that you really have to have special training. And I don't think that's true. I don't think you can maybe put a diagnosis on somebody. I don't think, as much as I watch children and people and am so immersed in the realm of being a people person, I don't think I have the right to give a diagnosis of who's bipolar, who's schizophrenic, any of those kind of things. But I can certainly tell if there's a problem, and I should be able to take, if I was in the realm of an elementary school, I should be able to make a phone call and say, I need somebody over here right away to address Renee Brewer because I see that something's going on. She's not talking. We need to help her. I should be able to do that. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, what off my nose does that take? None.
Hey, Renee, I hate to interrupt you, but Steve just came here, and he said to me, did you happen to see, because we were in the hospital yesterday on a Baker Act for the fourth time. I have a lot to say on the subject, but I just wanted Steve to say something about the age of the people that he saw. Go ahead, Steve.
I saw some little kids kind of running around in the adolescent section. I said to our son, Brian, what the heck is going on here? He goes, look over here, Dad. And then there's like a little room. It looks like kindergarten. There were like, I don't know, four, maybe five or six kids between the ages of five, seven, eight there. And I looked at one of the like admin-type clerks there. I said, what are these kids doing here? He shook his head like he was sad, and he goes, you know, sometimes they act out. A lot of it's ADHD or behavioral stuff, but the parents just Baker Act them. And I'm like, wow. Because, you know, our son was Baker Acted the other day. I don't know if Elise told you. Yeah, he's in treatment. Okay, at a place here in West Palm, and we were so appalled. During a community meeting, he was trying to express himself that he feels he's ready for transitional living. The doctor looks up at the sky, he pauses, then asks a 14-year-old girl what he thinks about Brian going to transitional. A 14-year-old girl for her comments on a son that's going to be 18 in 60 days. I've got 60 days to basically get him to straighten up, you know, and he's been making progress over the past 3 weeks. Long story short, Brian was asked to leave the room because the conversation got heated. About maybe five or 7 minutes later, Brian pops his head back in, and he says, hey, you know, can I come back in? Doctor, because he wanted to show he was in charge, says no. Brian continued to rant and rave and carry on. He was acting immature. And then when the meeting was over, he continued. He never cooled off. So he wasn't practicing his coping skills and his CBT and everything that he learned. However, the doctor then told one of the therapists, call 911. I want him Baker Acted. And to me, the definition of a Baker Act is when you're threatening to hurt yourself or someone else, not for, you know, not controlling his feelings because no one was letting him talk. So he actually spent Friday night and Saturday night in the hospital. We picked him up yesterday. We pulled him out of that place, and now we're looking into another option. So not to get too personal here, but the whole Baker Act thing to me is a bunch of nonsense. It really is. Unless the kid's going to hurt someone or themselves, it is a cop-out for doctors. It's a cop-out for parents. There was a mother there who has a 13- or 14-year-old girl that we met. She knows the girl's bipolar. She knows the girl has issues. She was going to a psychiatrist to treat those issues and to find out what her options are. The psychiatrist, the mom, and said, I'm calling 911, I'm Baker Acting her. So here's the psychiatrist you're going to for help, and they have the freedom, if they want to Baker Act the kid. The kid wasn't doing anything, wasn't threatening herself, just suffers from depression. The mother wanted to take her to Miami, to Miami Children's Hospital, for some treatment there. And then here it is, the girl spending all weekend in West Palm Hospital, and against the mother's will. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. I am going to get involved in what's going on here. I think we need to have a small meeting. You guys have been through hell and back, and
yes.
I think you both know that my heart goes out to you because I know the struggle that you've been going through, and it's not fair to you or to the rest of your family. So we do. Like I said, I'm composing something to send to Pam because I want to applaud the fact that they're doing something, but I also want to include some of these side effects that they may not even be aware of. And again, if we don't talk, we can't blame people for not listening, right? We're out of time, so I'm so glad you both came on the show today. You know that I love you, and I think about you guys all the time. I wish I could come up with something that was going to be beneficial. I don't know what to do for you, Brian. I wish I did.
Say a prayer. We're doing the best we can. We're trying to get him today to a place in Connecticut that we wanted him to go to in December, and where he got pre-authorized for 10 days through our insurance company, but we're waiting for a special case assignment because they're out of network and they're trying to work out the financial piece. So God willing, hopefully in the next couple hours we'll hear that it's okay, and I'm getting on a plane at 2 o'clock to take him there. I already booked my ticket, so.
Okay, well, if you guys need something from me, like come and sit with the other kids or do something like that, please call me. You understand?
Okay.
Yeah. I love you.
Yeah, we must be careful on that. Thanks, Greeny.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye, kids. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Okay. We'll talk later.
All right. Bye-bye.